Welcome to the Wealth Setting Podcast. This is episode 70. It's January 7th, 2015. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Our motto here at the Wealth Setting Podcast is that money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. And that's why I do my best to teach you the 10 wealth building principles that I learned over the last 30 years or so as I've built my own personal wealth. And you see, it's not about the money. To me, the whole point of being financially independent is so that you can be independent. So that you can be free, so that you can have your own liberty. And that's up to you. And the great part about making a conscious decision and walking towards freedom is that you become a free man or a free woman when you take that first step. You don't have to wait for 20 years until you've accumulated a million or $2 million. You can start becoming free today when you make that conscious choice to go from being a consumer to being a saver. And when you go from being a taker to being a producer. And that's being a producer whether you own your own company or whether you're an employee. Production is the ultimate source of wealth, and if you're not producing, you're never going to be wealthy. So start producing today. Reduce, cut back on your consumption. You'll find that you're earning more, you're saving more, and then eventually you'll be in the position where you'll have a nice nest egg built up, and you'll be able to put that money to work for you. That's how you develop residual investment income. There's no get-rich-quick schemes that work as far as I know of. You can't sit around and do nothing and expect to get paid for it. It's a lot of hard work, but it's worth it. And if for whatever reason you haven't done that in the past, you're plagued with debt, you haven't been a producer, well, do something in your life today. Put yourself on the right track. I'd suggest that you go back and listen to my first 10 episodes. That's what I call my 10 wealth building principles. I lay that out as a foundation. You'll find that they're very common sense based, but you don't find a lot of common sense in our society today. So if you're new to the show, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to those first 10 episodes. Today's episode, I'm going to impart some wealth-building wisdom to you today that you might call a cheapskate tip. And this is in response to many questions I've received from people, and I tried to get a lot of these answers in before the end of the year, and I didn't get to this topic, so I do want to cover it while we're still early in 2015. Now, a lot of you listeners have asked me for tips on saving money, and by the tone of your emails, I can tell that you're insinuating that I'm a cheapskate. Well, I wear that badge proudly. But I do prefer to refer to myself as thrifty. In any case, as I state over and over again, a key part of building wealth and attaining financial independence is to be a saver, to not be a consumer. People that attain middle-class millionaire status, or what I call blue-collar millionaires, they don't necessarily have flashy jobs or high incomes, but over their working career, over 20 and 30-year periods, they're disciplined savers. Now, I can't tell you exactly what that savings rate is. It's different for each person and their lifestyle, but I'll say generally, the people that I know that put away at least 10%, they're headed in the right direction. And then the people that do really well for themselves, where they're saving about 20% or more. Does that sound like an impossible task? Well, like I said, go back, listen to the first 10 wealth building principles, and then become a regular listener to this podcast, and maybe I'll be able to help you along that journey to where you can be more of a saver and realize that you don't have to consume as much, that all that consumption may not be making you as happy as you think it is. In fact, it could be the source of your unhappiness. Well, let me get off my soapbox. Let's get back to cheapskate tips. Well, today I'm not going to run down a whole list of things that I do to save money. I think as you listen to this podcast, you'll just hear me naturally talk about things that I do in my life, how I take my vacations, things that I do with my family, the way I keep my automobiles for, 10, 15 years at a time. I keep them in good repair. I just don't spend a lot of money buying new vehicles. These are just little things that I reveal about myself as we talk about the economy and other wealth building principles. So those are things that just come up in conversation. They come up when they're top of my mind, but I don't have a list. I'm not compulsive about things. I don't try and squeeze every penny. I just live thrifty. I just live conservatively. As I've mentioned before, the two biggest things most Americans spend their income on are housing and transportation. So if you can control your housing costs, whether that's rent or a mortgage, and then if you can control your transportation costs, and pretty much for most of us that means owning a car, if you can control those two things, you're about 80% of the way there. And when you have that much discipline and you're controlling those really big numbers, then the smaller things become easier. Like unplugging your cable and saying, hey, I'm just not going to send Comcast $100 a month. That's ridiculous. Or looking at your cell phone bill and saying, do I really need to be spending, $150 on this cell phone contract? How can I cut back? If you make a conscious effort to live in an affordable house or an affordable apartment and to drive an affordable vehicle, then you'll find it easier to make those other day-to-day decisions, which are going to help you build wealth. And it's not going to come tomorrow. It's going to take time. But I believe you'll find peace and happiness as you make that journey. So as far as your home goes, I tell people, based on the experience of my own life, what I know from my own budgeting and then from the many, many millionaires that I've talked to and interviewed over the years, if you want to become a millionaire or better on a middle-class income, then you can't spend more than 3 times your annual income on your home, on your mortgage. And you can't upgrade every time you get a raise. So what I mean by that is, if you're making $100,000, then you don't want to take out a mortgage on a home that's any more than $300,000. In fact, $250,000 would be better. If you're making $50,000, then you don't want a mortgage that's more than $150,000. And like I say, then you don't want to upgrade every time you get a raise. You want to stay in that home. So 20 years ago, if you were making $50,000 and you bought a home for $150,000 and you've been in it for 20 years and hopefully you paid it off on a 15-year mortgage, then today, most likely, you would be a middle-class millionaire. Because all that money that you saved by not paying it into a mortgage, you would have reinvested. You would have learned how to reinvest it in other real estate that you can rent out, or how to invest it in the stock market to get better returns, and that nest egg would be growing and growing. And that's how middle-class people attain financial independence. Now, you may be saying, well, hey, I live in Los Angeles or I live in Manhattan and I can't buy anything for $300,000. Well, you're right. And that's why I don't live in Los Angeles or Manhattan. So you may have to move. You may have to have a lifestyle change. If you don't, you'll just have to come to the realization that you're never going to get off that treadmill. You may like your flashy job in the Big Apple and you may think you're doing great because you're making $200,000 a year. But you know what? If your housing costs are $700,000, you're never going to build wealth. You're always going to be running that rat race. And that's a lifestyle that I don't want to live. As far as your transportation, if you're going to own a vehicle, then I encourage you to pay cash for it. And you may say, well, I don't have enough money to buy a new car. Well, there you go. The problem's the solution right there. You just told yourself that you can't afford a new car and you should be driving a used one. That may hurt your pride. That may not be glamorous enough for you. That used car may not be a chick magnet. But again, those are choices you have to make. In the next 10 years, 15 years, do you want to be wealthy? Or do you want to be driving around today in a fancy sports car or a big truck that you can't afford? Now, I'm definitely not opposed to buying new cars. I buy new cars. I just keep them for 12 or 13 or 15 years. I don't flip them every 2 or 3 years. I just drive them and drive them. I put new tires on them. I change the oil. I do the maintenance. Well, let me rephrase that. I have somebody do all that. I don't do it, right? I take it down and have Jiffy Lube change the oil. But I just make sure that my cars are in good repair. I keep them for a decade or more, and then I get a new one. I'm not out to impress anybody. I don't care if my neighbors aren't impressed by my 6-year-old Honda CRV, or if I'm driving to the store to buy groceries and I'm in the family van, which is nearly 12 years old. I don't care who sees me. You see, I know what I have in my bank account. I know how I live my life. That's what's important to me. And the important thing for you to understand is the way that I was able to build up that nest egg where it gave me enough critical mass where I could put that money to work for me. The way I got here was by always having that attitude. I've always driven inexpensive cars. I made that decision a long time ago because I was always more concerned with my freedom and independence, and I didn't want to be in bondage to a car payment. I'm 53 years old. I've owned a lot of new cars. I've owned a lot of used cars, but I have only ever had one car payment in my whole entire life. I had one loan on a car, and I think I paid it off in 3.5 years. But in every other case, I always purchased my cars with cash. That may be an alien idea to you, but think about it. That's why I'm in the position that I'm in today. Because as many of you would say, I'm a cheapskate. Well, let me get off cars and houses, and let me talk to you about being a cheapskate day to day. And again, I'm not going to give you a list. I'm not going to tell you all the things I do. In fact, if I told you how cheap I was, you probably wouldn't even believe me. And let me give you a little secret about being a cheapskate, or as I say, being thrifty. I'm not always cheap just to save money. A lot of times I'm cheap just because I don't want to be bothered with things. I'll give you for example. I like to travel a lot. I like to camp and things like that. Someday I think I'd like to own an RV, and I probably will eventually do that. But you know, right now at this phase of my life, I just don't want the hassles of owning an RV and having to take care of it. It's like a boat. Now, I'm not a big boater. I do like being out in the water. Although I live in the desert, I do love the ocean. But I've never owned a boat. I have no intentions of ever buying a boat because I don't want the hassle. If I'm going to go scuba diving, or I'm going to go out on the lake or out on the ocean, I'm going to rent a boat. And if it's a simple little lake that I can go out and putter around in myself, I'll just do it myself. If I'd be out in the ocean, you know, I'd hire a boat with a crew. That's a whole lot cheaper and a whole lot less headaches than having to actually own the boat itself. I'm that way with a lot of consumer products, too. There are a lot of things I don't buy just because I don't want the hassle of having to go shop for it. I like to go on Amazon, see what I want, order it, it shows up in 2 days. You see, the more things you accumulate, the more things you have to take care of, the more storage, the more maintenance, the more upkeep. Those are all headaches I don't really want to deal with. So in reality, maybe I'm just lazier than I am cheap. I don't know. But in any case, the lifestyle is working out nicely for me. So as far as a cheapskate tip, like I say, I'm not going to give you a list. I'm just going to tell you about one thing. And the point of this tip, and really the point about everything I do here on the Wealth Studying Podcast, it's to teach you to think for yourself. Because I can't tell you how to build wealth. I know how I did it in my life. I can give you my principles. I can give you my recommendations. But ultimately, you're a different individual. You're a different creature. You have different talents and abilities and likes, and you live in a different environment. And so although I can lay out basic fundamentals for you, you have to pick and choose what's most appropriate for you. You see, you have to think. And you know why most people in America aren't wealthy, even though they should be, even though they have the capacity to be? It's because they don't think. So the Wealth Studying Podcast is more about teaching you to think than it is about giving you earning tips or savings tips or hot tips for the stock market. Oh, I cover all those things. In certain episodes, I'll try and help you get a raise at work or perhaps give you some ideas of how to start up a company. And just about every week, I tell you what's going on in the stock market and generally give you an idea of where I'm investing my money. But it's not about you mimicking what I do. It's about you taking these principles and thinking and applying them in your own life. So here's my cheapskate tip for the day. Use your public library. You see, if you're going to be a wealth studder, if you're going to start your own business or you're going to invest in the stock market or real estate or whatever, you have to process a lot of knowledge, a lot of information. It isn't that you have to be formally educated, but you do have to be wise and you have to be intelligent. And you'll get that way by reading, by studying things. Now, the internet, if it's used properly, it's an amazing source of information. But I don't want you to discount your public library or maybe your university library if you live near a large college or university. You see, a lot of you, particularly those of you that are younger, you might just always go to the internet for your source of information. But what you have to be cautious of on the net is, one, is that a lot of times things are restricted, right? You either have to own a premium membership or you have to purchase something, or if you don't, you're just getting free information and you're not sure how much of that free information is reliable. You know, even with this podcast, even with my blogging over at investablewealth.com, this is free information. I mean, it's worth everything you're paying for it, which is nothing, right? So take it for a grain of salt. Challenge what I say. Don't take it for the gospel truth. Well, you need to do that with all sources of information, and particularly the things you see on the internet. Most things on the net are nothing more than advertisements or infomercials anyways. But let me get back to the public library. You see, what you may not be aware of is that your public library is a source of unbelievable amount of free information. Now, it's not so much free because your taxes are paying for it, and for that reason alone, you should be using it. But if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about or you haven't been to your library lately, go down there. Go visit your library, meet with the librarian, and have them tell you about all the free resources that are available through the library. And I'm talking both hard copy books as well as digital access. You see, if you want to be a wealth studder, if you want to gain that knowledge and learn how to start your own business or invest your money or buy real estate, then you need to study things. You need to study history. You need to study economics. And you need to study other people's lives. Personally, I'm a voracious reader of business principles and biographies and autobiographies. I love history. And you should find whatever niche that you love and really read about it and study it. And if you're reading a lot of books, that can get really expensive. And in a lot of ways, books are like the internet. You know, there's a lot of garbage in books too. So you don't want to go out and spend $30 or $40 or $100 on every book you want to read because there may only be one good idea in there or there may not be any good ideas in there. So what I'd encourage you to do is go to your library. Learn about the Interlibrary Loan Program. As far as I know, every public library in America participates in it. I know every city I've lived in, the libraries have always sponsored the program. And what that means is if the book that you want is in print and it's available in a library somewhere across the country, that most likely your library can get it for you for free and allow you to keep it for usually 3 to 4 weeks. Now, it may take a couple weeks to come in the mail, and that's why you have to be proactive and not impulsive. But if you're willing to do some research and order books through the Interlibrary Loan Program, you'll find that you'll not only save yourself, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars, but you'll also be reading books and things that otherwise you wouldn't have been exposing yourself to. And that's really the important thing here. I want you to go to the library and use their interlibrary loan process so you save money. But more importantly, I want the world of information to be opened up to you. All those books, all that knowledge. It's free. It's out there. You should be out there learning about it, filling your mind up with that knowledge, and then putting it to work. I know with the libraries that I'm familiar with, I've been able to get virtually any book that I've wanted through the interlibrary loan process. All I have to do is I go online to my library's website. I fill out a simple form. And for the most part, all the information I have to give them is the title, the publisher, the year it was published, and maybe the SKU number on it. I submit that through the library's website. In a couple weeks, they send me a text message. They say, come down to the library and pick up your book. It's that simple. And what you'll also find when you talk to your librarian is all the digital information that's available to you. You know, these are audio format books that you can download and listen to on your smartphone. access to subscription information, maybe publications like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or some other obscure magazine or a research publication that, you know, if you were using for commercial reasons, you'd have to pay for, but you can get it free through your library. And in those cases, I mean, that's all digital, so you don't even have to go into the library once you're set up on the program. You can just have access to that information, you know, through the internet at your own home. The publications, the research data, the reports, again, it's amazing what's available. It would cost you thousands and thousands of dollars. If you're really going to do some hardcore research, maybe about a business that you want to start up or trying to collect demographic information or something like that, you know, something that you want to educate yourself on that's a very specific niche topic, you may find that if you did that on your own, it would cost you thousands of dollars, but all that information is free via digital access at your library. Now again, your tax dollars are supporting that, so go use it. Be a cheapskate. Before you subscribe to a magazine or a newspaper, or before you purchase a book, check it out through the library first. Make sure you like it. Make sure it's valuable to you. The one thing I want to emphasize, particularly about books, you know, once you've read a book, if you found that book to be valuable, if you found that book to be life-changing, if you found that book to be a great resource to you, then you might want to buy it even after you've read it for free. And you might want to buy it for two reasons. One, you might want to have it as a reference copy. Having a book on your shelf, having it where it's within hand reach or within line of sight can be a great motivator to you. But the other reason is you just might want to reward and thank the author. If an author has written something that you've been able to put into practice that you've found profitable and valuable in your life, then you should reward that author. Go out and buy their book, if for no other reason, to thank them. You see, because when you apply wealth-building principles in your life, and when you save money so that you can be financially independent, you're not doing that to be a cheapskate or to be a miser. You're a giver. You want to give freely. You're going to find that you have a great abundance, and you're going to want to give of that abundance. You're going to want to reward other people for their efforts. When you become a giver, you find that it comes back to you. And I can't explain it, whether it's a religious connotation or a metaphysical principle. I just know when you build a surplus and then you share it, you experience more joy, more happiness, and you find that your wealth builds and builds. Your lamp never runs out of oil. Hey, let's get back to the library. Another tip I'll give you in terms of using the library, and I'll put this in the show notes for this episode, but you can go to a website, worldcat.org, and that's WorldCat like World Catalog, a catalog of the library, worldcat.org. You can go to that website, it's like a library catalog, you can put in your zip code, and then put in what author or what book you're looking for, and then it'll give you a list of all the libraries in your proximity that have that author's works or have that particular book. So that's a really quick way to do something if you don't want to wait on a couple weeks for the book to come in from interlibrary loan and you know that, hey, that book's available down at the city library or over at the local university's law library. You can just drive over there for the day. Even if you don't have a library card for that particular library, you can just go in, pull the book off the shelf, do your research. Again, that's a great way to preview the book. A lot of the books that I read that are of a business nature, of an investing nature, you know, they're very expensive. They can be $50, $100, $150. And you don't want to go out and spend $150 to get a book and then find out that the author was just overhyped and there's really nothing new there, no information. But if you find the book, you know it's locally available on that worldcat.org, drive over to the university library, look at the book, read a couple chapters, say, hey, this is valuable. You know, then go on Amazon and spend $150 or whatever. So that's my frugal cheapskate tip for you. Again, the point is not to give you a list of things that you can check off. The point is to teach you how to think. And I promise you, if you take wealth building principles, and you think and you apply them to your life, and you start today, then tomorrow you're going to be happier. Tomorrow you're going to be that much closer to financial independence and ultimately to your own personal freedom. And that's what wealth studying is all about. Well, hey, thanks for joining me on today's episode. As I mentioned before, I will be at the SHOT Show, which is coming up this month in Las Vegas. If you're going to be there, get in touch with me. And as I also mentioned, I'm considering an idea of maybe doing a Google Hangouts or experimenting with some media like that where we could do a joint conference call or video conferencing. This would be just something at no charge, just a free service, maybe on a Friday evening or a Saturday morning, where I could take some of your questions in real time. And we could do it in small, intimate groups. So if that's something you're interested in, let me know that as well. And then I'll look for ways that maybe I can put that together. Well, as always, you can reach me at the website, which is wealthstudying.com. If you have questions or concerns or comments, I'd love to hear from you. I'm also very appreciative to those of you that have gone out and subscribed in iTunes and that have left reviews for the show. Thank you so much. That really helps get the word out and build the community. And until our next episode, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.